quick. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem.
Biz Talk Radio is proud to bring you Investor's Edge with Gary Kaltbaum. Straight talk about you and your money. You can reach Gary now at 877-747-EDGE. That's 877-747-3343. Here is your host, Gary Kaltbaum.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum, who's out today. Today is Wednesday, February 20th, 2019, and we have a great show for you tonight. We want to thank you very much for being here. As you know, before we jump into it, let me just give some housekeeping. This is a show about you and your money and all points in between. Just as a quick reminder, if you don't get the show in your city, you can go to GaryK.com and listen live or archive. All the shows are available on demand, so you can pause it, rewind it, fast forward it, and listen to any part of the show on GaryK.com by just clicking on the radio tab or the latest show, and you can get it right there. Also, the show is live Monday through Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. And also on GaryK.com, you can follow Gary on Twitter. You can sign up to Gary's Conviction Leaders Report, which is a fantastic report that I strongly recommend everybody sign up to. It's available on GaryK.com. There's a big banner there. Or you can go to ConvictionLeaders.com and take a free trial. You can also subscribe to Gary's Morning Notes and get them sent directly to your inbox. And you can email Gary, read the rest of his commentary, and ask about his money management services if you have interest. Now, a few highlights for today's show. The Fed minutes came out today. We had another round of earnings that were released. And we spoke yesterday about a few important sectors, and there was some really good feedback with going through, taking the time to talk about the retail stocks. We spoke about the transportation stocks and spoke about financials in depth. So I'll go through a few more sectors since it was a fan favorite from the audience and spend some time just, you know, rolling up our sleeves and looking at individual stocks, separating leadership from laggards. And then I'm going to speak about, if we have time, the psychology to the market, which is a really big component of what I do. And that's really what drives me, the whole mental side of the game, if you will. Because anyone can buy a stock. You know, even just making money, the rules of money or the science of money in general, it's the only thing stopping you from getting ahead is yourself. And I always like to roll up my sleeves and dig in real deep. So I'll try to keep it really light and keep it fun, because I know psychology is a really fun topic, and I'm being sarcastic. So I will do my best to keep it light and just briefly touch on it. But there's a lot of good just lessons from the mental pit, if you will, instead of the trading pit, that people just, they don't teach you, that no one talks about. But it's really important to have the right mindset when you're trading, because, you know, it's between you. I always say there's three people here. It's me, myself, and I. So it's between you and yourself, and when you look yourself in the mirror, what's stopping you from pulling the trigger? What's stopping you from getting in, getting out, making the right decisions? Not even, you know, the easy decisions, more along the lines of making the hard decisions at the right time. So I'll get into all of that in a little bit more a little bit later. But first, without further ado, let me jump right into the market wrap. Let's see. Today we had a mildly up day. The NASDAQ has an eight-day winning streak after the Fed released its minutes. The Dow ended up 53 points to 25,944. The S&P 500 ended up about 5 points to 27,84. The NASDAQ Composite eked out a 2-point gain to close at 74,89. And the small cap Russell 2000 ended up about 6.5 points to 15,81.06. The VIX, which is that fear index I talked about yesterday, was down another almost 87, well, about 87 cents, or about 6%. So down almost about 6% and closed at 14.01. That's relatively low considering where it was just a few weeks ago. You know, 7-8 weeks ago, it was in the it was much, much higher. So the VIX is something to watch because it's a good volatility index. They talk about it, but for me, it's a good gauge of fear and good gauge of selling. Whenever you see the VIX spike above 15, above 20, you know that downside, you know, the market's falling and fear is picking up. So it's just something, secondary sentiment gauge to watch, but it's something good to watch nonetheless. Now let's talk about a few things here. Today, the big news, ladies and gentlemen, came from the Federal Reserve. You know, I spoke yesterday on the show, and Gary's talked about this at length. The primary, driver of this entire bull market has been easy money from the Fed and other central banks. Yesterday, we saw the Bank of Japan come out and say, hey, we have no problem announcing more easy money if markets don't cooperate. Now, the U.S. Fed, which is the primary driver of all these central banks, has really led the way with respect to announcing more easy money. And the Fed balance sheet is $4 trillion. And I mean T. That's a trillion with a T. Not billion, not million, but trillion. That's massive when you think about it. Now, of course, when you compare that to the size of the global, the U.S. economy and where we are, and there's a lot of other factors into it, a lot of that, ladies and gentlemen, came from the aftermath of the financial crisis. And people ask all the time to get into the minutiae of it. I'm not going to do that on this show. If you want to email me separately or email Gary, by all means, feel free. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to 50park.com or you can go to adamsarhan.com or even chartyourtrade.com and send me emails there or reach out that way. Gary is available at garyk.com. But for the highlight, for the important points of the show, it's important to know that the Fed stepped in, announced easy money, and they did a few things. They printed money with QE1, QE2, and QE3, quantitative easing. And they also bought bonds and mortgage bonds and other derivatives and all of these different esoteric-type securities, or just investments, if you will. And the whole idea was to help stimulate markets, all about flow. And as they increased liquidity, it's a fancy word that people love to use, their balance sheet grew and grew considerably. So they just bought assets. I mean, just to keep it really simple, right? My brain is binary. It either works or doesn't work. It's on, it's off. It's that simple. So what did the Fed do? They bought a bunch of assets in the wake of the financial crisis to stimulate markets and restore confidence and helped markets go higher, specifically stocks. Now, as their balance sheet grew and grew and grew and grew, back in early 16 and 17, they started to reduce their balance sheet, meaning they started to sell some of these bonds that they were buying and mortgage-backed securities and all these other kind of things that they had, these other assets that they had on their books. And the reason why they did that was because they can't keep the balance sheet growing forever. I mean, it's just, you get to a certain point where it's just too much by any normal means. I mean, forget the fact of just normalcy in your definition or my definition of it. It's just, you know, it's not prudent, for lack of a better way of giving, without going into commentary on any specific decision. So the reality is that the Fed's been slowly selling off or trimming their balance sheet. And what they announced today, which was the minutes of the big pivotal meeting that changed, you know, that really prompted or changed the narrative, if you will, prompted this big rally we saw on Wall Street since the end of December, all of January and the first half of February, and this just grind higher, came after the Fed reversed its stance. And it went back to an easy money stance. And today's minutes came from that big January, the end of January meeting, where we officially had that announcement. And the Fed said basically that they're more than comfortable to stop. You know, they want to stop halting or selling off the balance sheet by the end of the year. That in of itself is bullish for stocks, because that's another way, a roundabout way, of more easy money. Because if the Fed's in the marketplace selling, that's a big seller. Somebody's got to buy. And that puts pressure on the market. So when they stop selling, guess what? It reduces that pressure, and it's another way of them announcing or taking a step towards easy money. And like I said yesterday, that whole Fed, the concept of the Fed put, right? We know the Fed blinked when the stock market fell 20%. That's now their threshold. Before, during, you know, the early years of the financial crisis, the market would drop 10%. The Fed would announce more easy money, another round of QE, buy more bonds, whatever the case may be. Double up. They've done all these different tactics. But now we know their level right now, based on the last, you know, the decline in December, it's down 20%. Okay, so we've had a sharp rally since then. Here are the minutes. The minutes basically confirm what we already knew. And they tell us by the end of the year, the Fed's happy to stop reducing its balance sheet. And that's a net positive for stocks, because it's considered more easy money. And when you put that into the equation for other central banks, Bank of England, Bank of Japan, you know, the list goes on and on, your bank, situation where the overwhelming majority of global central banks are all in the easy money phase. And that's why the market just refuses to fall. And when you look at the stock market and you look at the way that it just continues to grind higher after a real big sell-off in the fourth quarter of 18, it tells you that there's something bigger at play, right? Normally, you don't see the market fall 20% and then rally right back up again. But when the Fed changes its stance, the market's listening. Remember, the Fed's the one that caused the big sell-off in the fourth quarter when they said, hey, we're going to be a little bit more hawkish, meaning we'll be a little bit more aggressive, less easy money. And then they change their stance and boom, stocks rallied. Up next, we're going to talk about individual sectors, individual stocks, and a whole lot more. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
Time to switch on the integrator units and get the brain cells working.
You're listening to...
Hey, this promises to be fun.
Investor's Edge.
The last bastion of quality programming.
With Gary Kaltbaum.
It doesn't get better than this.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum. In case you're just joining us, we spent the first part of the show going over the major indices. We spoke about the Fed minutes and what it means for stocks. Basically, the Fed has taken another, made it abundantly clear that they're taking another step towards that easy money side of the spectrum, if you will, and away from the hawkish statements that sent the market lower in the fourth quarter of 18. Now that we know the Fed's, you know, blinked at down 20% for the S&P, that's a line in the sand. On the downside, the market's going to look at maybe retest, not retest. You know, we just know down 20%, the Fed's going to do something. So the market has really rallied straight up for the last 7-8 weeks now. You've had very little selling during that time. Now, during that time, people ask all the time, how can stocks just go straight up? And when you have a situation where the Fed and other central banks are, again, coordinated easy money, that's the answer. Late December, if you remember, you had a situation where fear had taken over. Stocks were falling and falling hard. All intents and purposes, we're entering a bear market. And then almost snap a finger, Fed comes in with this bullish pixie dust. Easy money, boom, markets take off. I'm mentioning it because it's something that should be respected. You know, the elephant in the room, watch the Fed. The biggest lesson over the last 10 years, ladies and gentlemen, watch the Fed and other central banks. Now, on to individual stocks and some movers of the day. So the big story yesterday from the earnings front was Walmart. Today, the big story, and Walmart had gapped up after reporting numbers. Today, the big story was CVS. Stock gapped down about 9%. Closed down $5.66 to $64.22. CVS has not been acting well over the last several months. Really, you go back to 2015, stock had hit an all-time high of $113.65 back in the summer of 15, and now you're trading at $64. It's not just CVS, and they just had a big acquisition, by the way. You also see some pressure in a few other pharmacies. Walgreens, similar situation, had an all-time high back in 2015 of $97.30. Now you're trading at $71.80. And you had a lot of consolidation, a lot of big expansion with these pharmacies. And then Rite Aid, RAD, another one that just has been dead for a while. And this is just going straight down, so it's not even worth mentioning. But the pharmacy space itself is somewhat interesting. It's very lucrative for obvious reasons, right? The population ages. We know we have more, baby boomers are retiring at record numbers. Population, the average age expectancy is now growing. So people are living longer. Well, what happens when you live longer? You need healthcare services, right? You're going to be consuming a lot more things that the pharmacy sells. And I want to keep this as simple as possible. So what happens is you've got a perfect storm here for higher prices. Well, why aren't these pharmacies, the stocks, acting well, acting better? And why are they under pressure? A few reasons. As you've had a big influx of consolidation in the area, you know, you have two big pharmacies now, more or less. It's CVS and Walgreens. in the U.S., you have a situation where there's a lot of online pharmacies that have been sprouting up and taking a lot of competition. But Amazon has even talked about entering the space. And, you know, Amazon's a big disruptor and a big threat to a lot of these brick-and-mortar retailers. Up until recently, hasn't really been a threat to the traditional pharmacy, but they've made some hints that they're trying to enter that space. So that's just something to keep in mind as you watch these pharmacies. And, of course, there's other pharmacies. Walmart's got a pharmacy and other pharmacies as well. But you've seen just a lot of consolidation in those areas. Now, the pharmacies are strategically trying to diversify their income stream, meaning CVS with their recent acquisition of Aetna, right? So you're going into a situation where they're trying to expand their business lines. They don't want to just be relied on one or two areas of income. They want to be able to have other areas that are related to healthcare and related to helping people and related to what they do to diversify from business risk, whether it be Amazon or it be online or whatever the case may be. So that's just something to keep in mind. Now, CVS specifically, the stock is under pressure. It's not acting well. And the recent lows of $60, right around $60.14-ish, going back to about March of last year, it almost has a big floor. If that level's taken out, you're probably going to have a new leg lower. So it's just something to consider as we look forward. I mean, the guidance was down for CVS, and it just investors want something to bite their teeth into or stick their teeth into, excuse me, take a bite out of. They want a story. They want some kind of growth. And if the company itself is not optimistic of its own growth, it's very tough for investors to become optimistic. Let me repeat that. So every time we're in the middle of earnings season, you know, tail end now, most of earnings have been out, but we still have a lot of retail stocks coming out with earnings and lots of other companies also over the next several weeks. And as you go through earnings season, I'm asked all the time, you've got a situation where, let's talk about earnings for a second. The company announces their earnings and revenue every quarter. Most companies give guidance for future quarters. Now, I've seen just about everything. I've seen companies beat on earnings, miss on revenues, miss on earnings, beat on revenues, raise guidance, lower guidance, and the stock's gone up, down, and sideways in all those scenarios. Any possible scenario you can think of, it happens. There are lots of other factors that come into play with respect to earnings. Where has the stock been? Where is it going? Is there something negative in the report that's not, you know, the headline figure? People just look at the headline numbers compared to expectations. Is there growth? You know, the best way to look at it is annual growth. The same quarter last year versus the same quarter this year. What are just a like-minded comparison? You know, if they earned a dollar last year in the fourth quarter, and now they're just reporting their fourth quarter numbers, and they earn $1.25, that means that's earnings growth at 25%. That's good. But the stock could be down if they lower guidance considerably, even though you have earnings growth. So keep that in mind. The market always looks forward. And the earnings report, by definition, tells you what happened in the past. So when you come to interpret these numbers and you want to make sense of the market, everybody's dying to make sense of the market. I saw a guy on Twitter, somebody emailed me, one of his comments earlier today was, the Fed minutes came out. My wife asked, why does that matter for stocks? Market was down right afterwards and then it was up. He writes back, I stopped explaining. Doesn't matter. Who knows? There's no logical explanation, right, for any short-term gyration that happens. But people are desperate. Why? Why is this happening? So I always focus on the what. What is happening? Because that's where we all make money and or lose money. So it's important to understand the why, but it's more important to understand what is actually happening. So you can take the whys, and there are lots of different reasons why something's happening, and focus on the bottom line, which is when you enter, when you exit, and how much you risk if you're wrong. If you could focus on those three things, you're way ahead of the game. Because part of this business is filtering out the noise. And there's so much noise out there. So that's a brief look at earnings. It's a brief look at the pharmacy space in general. Brief look at the consumer. Up next, we're going to talk a little bit more about healthcare stocks and biotechs and some other areas of the market and a whole lot more. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
You're listening.
listening to
America is talking
Investor's Edge.
He's got to be pleased with that. The crowd is just on its feet here. He's a Cinderella boy.
With Gary Kaltbaum.
Comes highly recommended. You're going to feel better if you talk to him.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum, who's out today. In case you're just joining us, we spent the first part of the show going over the major indices. We spoke about the Fed minutes and the power of easy money from global central banks, and specifically the Fed. And then we spoke briefly about earnings. The big stock today that captured the attention of the market was CVS. CVS gapped down after reporting numbers. The pharmacy space, briefly spoke about that, has been under pressure recently from the likes of Amazon and other online pharmacies, and also just a wave of consolidation. Remember, pharmacies 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was just a lot more competition. Now it's down to two major pharmacies, CVS and Walgreens, more or less, and you've got some other pharmacies, like Walmart's got a pharmacy and some others. But you've just the area, the industry, has consolidated sharply. So really the question becomes is, where's the growth going forward? And a lot of these pharmacies have, well, specifically CVS, has made some strategic acquisitions, looking to diversify their holdings. And if you missed any part of the show, let me just pause for a second. Remember, you can always go to GaryK.com and listen live or the archive. You can pause the show, rewind it, fast forward, etc. So for more on the pharmacy talk, by all means, go back and feel free to, if you miss any part, to go back and rewind it and listen again. Shows should be available after 8 p.m. Eastern. Just about every day there's a show. So Monday through Friday. Now, on to other news. Some after-hours news. I just saw Lyft plans to launch an IPO roadshow the week of March 18th, so that might put some pressure on Uber to launch their IPO roadshow sometime soon thereafter. We have Samsung just announced four new phones, Galaxy phones, to take on the iPhone. That could put some pressure on Apple stock. We're not quite sure yet. We'll find out, because so far in the past, Samsung's phones just haven't captured mass appeal, specifically the way Apple's phones have. We'll see. Some other news that has crossed the headlines today. Elon Musk was in the news. I think he had 40 executives since 2016 have left Tesla. That's a lot. 40 executives have left Tesla. Stock has been just going nowhere for a while. Doesn't mean the stock's going lower. Doesn't mean it's going higher. It's just been consolidating for a long time now. I think the market there is just waiting to see the success of the Model 3 and to see whether or not Tesla's able to continue to deliver. And they take these audacious goals or these big, big, big goals, and it's a matter of now, you know, can you actually show up and deliver? So we'll see what happens there. Other companies are entering the electric car space. I know Jaguar just recently launched their I-Pace or their I-Type, and Mercedes and BMW and a lot of other companies are doing the same. So there's other pressure as well for these electronic cars and e-cars, and even the trucks now are coming out with companies are coming out with these semis, and there's no question the trend is moving in that direction. It's just a matter of the batteries and when the ability for these companies to deliver a mass market product that actually works and is scalable. In other words, people can actually buy them, they can use them, they can charge them, and it's practical. In other words, you can take it on a road trip and not have to worry about your battery running out of juice in the middle of the trip and then being stuck or calling a tow truck. So that's something else. And the other big news that came out today with respect to Tesla was they say that they're expecting to have a self-driving car ready in a year. And that's pretty aggressive. I don't know if you've tried those Teslas autopilot or not, I mean the options, but it's pretty surreal. The way that the autopilot works is just like a cruise control, where you put your destination, a little different obviously, but you put your destination in the Tesla, you plug in, it's got the GPS, the big screen, and then you push where you want to go. And then the car takes you there. And if there's red lights, it'll obviously stop at the red light. It'll know to make a left turn. It'll know to get on the highway. It can merge lanes. It's surreal. And if you want to take over or turn off the autopilot feature, you just simply press the brakes and or put your hand on the wheel and just turn it. And then boom, just like we do with the cruise control, or you can just push the button and the autopilot feature goes off. So the first time I drove the autopilot, this was a few years ago when it first came out, you push the brake and it comes off from a maybe 2 mile drive, and it was in a small, you know, residential-ish type back road, maybe 3 or 4 cars in front of me, and there's a red light half a mile down the street. I might have pressed the brake 6 times, 5 or 6 times to take it off, just because it was surreal. The first time you do it, it's a very, very bizarre feeling. But then as I got more comfortable with it, you get more comfortable, and you just like anything else, it just becomes part of the way it works. But it's a very, very interesting experience, and I recommend everybody at least try it, because the self-driving feature is something pretty mind-blowing, for lack of a better word. Now, on to stocks. So we spoke about the pharmacy stocks, briefly talked about the big macro case, or the bullish case for healthcare stocks in general. And if you look at the XLV, which is a popular ETF that tracks healthcare stocks, it's trading right near an all-time high. Its record high was hit in the fourth quarter of 18 at 96.06. Right now, the XLV is at 92.52. Why are healthcare stocks so, you know, acting well, or just so strong? The reason simply is because, which I alluded to earlier with the pharmacy conversation in the prior segment, is the fact that you know, people, life expectancy is growing, so people are living longer than ever before. As they live longer, their demand or their needs to consume these healthcare type goods and services and products grow exponentially. And older people tend to be wealthier than younger people, so the older people have money to spend, and they have money to spend on themselves. And when they're in pain and or they want some medicine or drugs or whatever the case may be to help them alleviate the pain or live longer or whatever the case may be, they're happy to spend it because it's on themselves and it's longevity. So that's the bullish case. Record number, the population's aging, you know, record number of people retiring, and they're living longer than ever before. So on to specifics. Now, that's the bullish case there. The XLV is trading just near an all-time high, and if it can get going here, it could easily go hit new all-time highs. Few of the stocks in the XLV. One to mention, Johnson & Johnson, J&J. Stock has not been acting well. Last time, there was that big talc case, and they have some other controversial cases going on with litigation, with Risperdal and some other things there. It's just something to consider. But from the way the stock's been acting, hit an all-time high last year of 148.99, and right now you're at 136.35. Few other ones that are in the XLV that's noteworthy is UNH, which is United Health. All-time high there was last year at 287.94, and now you're at 269.51. If you look at UNH on an annual chart, going back to 09, the stock has literally been up every single year since 2009. That's pretty impressive. And if you want to see a picture-perfect case, it's setting up, right, by the way, very nicely right now, just above the 50. During that little correction in the fourth quarter, stock fell but then quickly rebounded. It's forming a little bit of a handle here, or sideways head and shoulders pattern, however you want to word it. A move above 271 or 272 rather would be bullish, 273 if you want to go up a little bit higher. Take a look at a long-term annual chart when you have a chance of UNH, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about with respect to this, the bullish trend for these healthcare stocks. Big, big moves. You've got a lot of momentum. You've got a lot of buying coming in. Now, be careful of when you buy stocks and where you enter and where you exit. You know, buying early in the move or buying late in the move. It depends. If the move continues, you can still have a lot more upside. But always be careful of when you're buying. And the underlying, you know, are you late to the party or you early to the party? And, of course, where you're going to enter, where you're going to exit, and how much you're going to risk if you're wrong. Those are the three things that I look for whenever I buy or sell anything. Now, a few other things that I want to mention. Let's see here. We've got Pfizer, Merck. We're familiar with those. Those are more defensive. They acted okay back in the fourth quarter when the market was getting hit. The market recovered. Pfizer's now below its 50. Have a little downward trend line forming there. It's trying to get going, but it's just consolidating the game. Merck, on the other hand, is trading right near a 52-week high, acting well. Let's see here. We have a few other ones we can talk about. We've got Abbott Labs, ticker symbol is ABT. Let's pull that up for a second here. We've got, let's see, Abbott Labs, there we go. acting very, very well, trading right near a new record high, if not at a record high. Last year's high was 74.92, and right now you're at 75.57, so you're at a new all-time high, and the stock's acting very well. When you have a chance, take a look at ABT if you want to see what a leading stock looks like. Merck, similar situation, and that's why the XLV is acting so well, because you look at the components, and several of them are trading at highs or new highs, and that bodes well for the group. Up next, we'll talk some biotechs, we'll talk a little bit more healthcare, and some movers of the day. Once again, I'm Adam Sarhan. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
You're listening to...
What are we waiting for?
Well, what are you waiting for?
One, two, ready,
now!
Go.
Action! Investor's Edge with Gary Kaltbaum.
And welcome once again to Investor's Edge. I'm Adam Sarhan, in for Gary Kaltbaum, who's out today. In case you're just joining us, we spent the first part of the show going over the major indices, spoke about the Fed minutes, easy money, and what that does to stocks, i.e. send stocks higher. Spoke about the fact, shifted a little bit, spoke about CVS. That was a big stock that gapped down today after reporting numbers. Spoke about the pharmacy group, and just healthcare in general has been a big theme in the macro space because people are living longer. A lot of baby boomers are retiring, and as people live longer, and they're wealthy, by the way, they have money to spend on healthcare services. So you look at individual stocks, we went through a few of them, and they're acting very, very well. Abbott Labs is where we left off. ABT is a symbol there. And before I keep going, if you missed any part of the show, by all means, go back to GaryK.com, and you can pause it, rewind it, fast forward, and listen at your leisure. So a few other, I know we're short on time, so a few other stocks we can cover here. In the XLV, I'd go with Amgen, AMGN. This is a biotech company, and it's you could see it moving sideways for a long time. Not as good as Abbott, ABT, not as good as Merck, but it's still holding its own. Now, let's shift gears to the biotechs. IBB is a symbol there that tracks the biotechs, or you can look at the XBI. But let's look at the IBB since it's a popular ETF that people use to track the biotechs and had a big sell-off in the fourth quarter, bottomed in December along with everything else, rallied really sharply right back up, and now it's basing near the 200-day moving average. Has the same head-and-shoulder type pattern, that V-neck recovery, moved sideways for a few weeks, tried to break out, now it's pulling back in a little bit. And within the IBB, you've got the same bullish case where the people are living longer, they're using the goods and services of these biotech companies and the healthcare stocks. So let's go through a few of them just to show you how the closer look at the group. Biogen, BIIB is a symbol there. Stock is moving sideways, had a all-time high back in 2015 alongside the other biotechs, by the way. All-time high there was 480, stock's trading at 335. So it's moved sideways for the last several years. But it could get going again, and when it does, if it does go, break out and go up to the upside, it could easily move much higher. That's Biogen. Another next one, Celgene, but they just got bought out. CELG, Gilead, GILD. Let's talk about that one. Gilead, that hit an all-time high in 2015 at $123.37. Right now, you're at $67, just below $67 at $66.98. A few other ones quickly. We talked about Amgen. So Illumina, ILMN. ILMN is a symbol there. Stock hit an all-time high last year at 372.61. Now you're at 302. Stock is acting well, stronger than its peers. A little downtrend line here for the last few months. And if it can break above, I would say, the 315 range, probably going to do its best to get to a new all-time high or at least start rallying back up to the mid-300s. And then the last one that I want to talk about in the biotech space is Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, REGN. And there its all-time high was hit back in 2015 as well at 605.93. And now you're at 422.51. Trying to recover. You're still moving sideways for the last several years. Trying to break out of a little downward trend line, but it's got some more room to go. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a quick look at the biotechs and the healthcare stocks. Yesterday, we spoke about the transportation stocks, the financials. We spoke about the farming stocks earlier today. So it's just a good view of the overall market and how the, you know, the what's happening under the surface. So you've got some areas that are leading, some areas that are lagging. I know I'll be back on Friday doing the show. I might have to do it tomorrow, depending on Gary's travel and his internet. But on Friday's show, I'm going to talk about some other sectors just to give you a more holistic view of what's happening under the surface. For now, stepping back, I did mention earlier in the show that I'll be speaking about some psychology, and I just want to briefly touch on it. And again, if you want to reach out to me separately, you can feel free. You can go to adamsarhan.com or you can go to 50park.com and send me a message there, and or chartyourtrade.com and sign up or send a message there as well to interact. And I encourage interaction from everybody. It's something that I thoroughly enjoy, because when I got started, you know, Gary was there for me and that was about it. So I'm always appreciative and thank him kindly for that. And it's something that I like to give back, because I know how it feels to want to reach out, and it's tough, you know, wanting to make money in the markets, wanting to understand how to zig and zag and just make sense of it all. So I'm more than happy to engage with anybody that would like to engage. With respect to the topic that I want to talk about today, so we spoke briefly during the show about the three important questions I ask myself. Where am I going to enter? Where am I going to exit? And how much am I going to risk when I'm wrong? Part of this business is overcoming and changing your association with money. We're all emotionally attached to money. Therefore, making rational, objective decisions is extremely difficult for the untrained eye. Meaning, you make $1 million or you lose $1 million. If you make $1 million, are you happy, you sad? We all know we're going to say happy. If you lose $1 million, are you happy, you sad? Clearly, you know, you might be angry, you might have other emotions, but if you notice, happy, sad, angry, these are all emotions. Money's an object. Do you have any emotional attachment to the hanger in your closet? Most likely the answer is no. Or the doormat in front of the door? The answer is no. Why? The hanger in your closet has no emotional value to you, or sentimental value, right? It's just a hanger. Money is a similar situation. Now, you need money to do things, to live and spend and eat and have shelter, etc., etc. So people from a very young age have an emotional attachment to the money. Now, I know I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to keep it real short and just try to help you understand the big picture. It's very important to separate the emotions from the decision-making process. I'm not saying to be unemotional when you lose money or you make money, but try to make decisions objectively. And if you need to write them down, you need to bounce them off with somebody else. Whatever exercises you want, look at it when markets are closed, make decisions over the weekend or at nights, and then implement them during the day. Whatever it is that you want to do, just ask yourself, how do I remove the emotions from the equation? There's the buzzer, the bell. Once again, it's another fantastic. It's been a pleasure. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for listening. This is the one and only Investor's Edge.
Thanks for joining us for another edition of Investor's Edge on the Biz Talk Radio Network. If you missed any of today's show, or to get in touch with Gary Kultbaum, please go to GaryK.com. That's GaryK.com. To reach Gary Kultbaum at his office, call 1-888-422-5559. That's 1-888-422-5559.